It's Wednesday, the 16th of March, 2016. Happy birthday to Reggie Bullock, Tony Douglas, Tim Hardaway Jr., and Blake Griffin. The Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Show, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and TMAC7141. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to sponsor the podcast like TMAC7141 just did, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes. Thank you to everyone who has done that. The numbers have been sensational this season, and it helps the podcast grow significantly. So thank you to everyone who has done that. Of course, Moneyball gets a big thank you as well for supporting the podcast all through the season. They are Australia's best DFS site. So if you're looking for some DFS action and you live in Australia, or if you live in New Zealand, make sure you're checking out Moneyball. This podcast you can catch, obviously, on iTunes and all of your favorite podcast locations. You can also see it on YouTube, and you can watch it live on YouTube. And if you are watching live on YouTube and you want to interact with the show while it's happening, tweet at me at redrock_bball, and we can interact as the show is going on. I've actually got a question for the live listeners or live viewers, if there's some that are on watching at the moment. And the first person to tweet me back the correct answer gets a shout out on air. The question is, this season there have been 282 players or game instances of people getting a triple one. And that is 1 3-pointer, 1 block, and 1 steal. So not more, not 2 threes, not 2 blocks. There have been 282 instances of a triple one. Which player has had the most triple ones this season? Tweet at me, redrock_bball, your answer, and I'll shout you out, the first person to tweet me the correct answer. That's out of the way. We've got a lot to get to. We had a pretty interesting Tuesday. We've got a big Wednesday, as per usual. So,
let's get to it.
I'll do my best. Whew, Instagram. We're looking at Evan Turner. How many combined points, rebounds, and assists he was going to get. The total was 16. A couple of people guessed 15, but that's not right. We need 16, so no one gets that one right. Our first answer comes in from Buddha's Love Handles to which player has the most triple ones. His answer was Giannis, and that is incorrect. Giannis Antetokounmpo has not had the most. Yul Collins tweets in, Danny Green, that answer is also incorrect. Keep guessing, guys. On Facebook, the contest we're looking for is DeAndre Jordan. How many combined points, rebounds, and blocks would DeAndre have? The total was 31, and we had a cavalcade of people get this one correct. Dylan Mee, Joseph Diefenbach, Daryl Kissick, Jan-Henrik Liquette, and
my name is Jeff.
Jeff Richard Padre, all getting that one correct. So congratulations to all you guys. If you want to participate in the daily contests, on Instagram for Wednesday, we're going to be looking at Darren Williams. How many combined points, assists, and steals he will have. And on Facebook, it's Rudy Gay. How many combined points, rebounds, assists, and steals for Gay. So make sure you're participating in those daily contests as well. So thank you to everyone who has done that so far. Let's get into the monstrous line of the night. I don't think we've had a clean sweep for quite a while, but that's exactly what we had tonight. The monstrous line of the night, the waiver wire line of the night, and the young gun of the night all go to the Brooklyn Nets' Bojan Bogdanović, who played 37 minutes and had 44 points. He hit 4 triples, had 8 rebounds, 2 assists, and not only that, he was brilliant from the field as well. 17 of 27, which is a massive, massive boost in the playoffs. To get that sort of big field goal bump, it's huge. On 27 shots, to shoot 63% is massive. And then he also went 6 of 7 from the free throw line. So clearly a career game from Bojan. Ben Parrish just tweeted in with his answer, is Bojan the guy to get the most triple ones? No, he is not. Keep guessing. I was surprised by the answer, to be honest. I wasn't expecting this guy to be... I don't want to throw you off too much because it's not like it's Jakar Sampson, but I didn't expect this guy to be the player who had the most triple ones this season. Back to Bogdanović. What do you do with him? I reckon he's been a guy that you should have really looked at owning for quite a while. But it's been tough because he's been sort of in and out. He had that bullshit rest the other day. He's a top 100 player over the last couple of weeks. He's just outside the top 100 over the last month in 29 minutes a game. Now, he's not going to shoot like this, and his last week he's shooting 53% from the field. That's not realistic, but he is at 46 over the last 2 months, so that's obviously pretty impressive. His free throws are pretty good, but what he requires is he requires a good shooting night because he doesn't do much in the other areas. He's less than half a steal a game. He's gotten, for the season, I'll bring up how many total blocks has he had? 4. So he's not helping in that area. He's not an assist guy. He's averaging, although the last 2 weeks, he's increased that area. He's averaging 3 assists a game in the last 2 weeks, which is well up on the 1.2 that he's been doing so far. And his rebound's way up as well. So those sort of things are not, they're not really all that, you know, great. He's going to be a points guy. He's going to be a solid free throw guy. And he's going to be a three-pointers guy. And he's at 2.2 triples a game over the last month. He's fine to own, no doubt, absolutely. But you're in playoffs. You've got to really look, where do I need my bump? If I need steals, if I need rebounds, if I need field goal percentage to get over my opponent this week, then I'm not adding Boyan. But you know, he's definitely fine to add. You want a kickstart in some threes. You want some points, you know, all that sort of stuff. He will help in. But it doesn't make him a must-own player by any stretch. But the minutes are going to be there. There's not like there's massive competition across the wings in Brooklyn. He was a guy that I was pretty interested in at the start of the season, but never got a significant enough role to do much with it, which was disappointing to me. I wish he was able to play those minutes because he had a massive hot streak to end last season as well, and he could go along the same way here. Fine to own, by no means must own. It's all very much coming down to what you actually need at this point. Another guest came in from UL Collins, who's guest for the most triple ones for the season was Trevor Ariza. That is incorrect as well. So keep on guessing. I want the player who's had the most triple ones for the season. That is exactly 1 3, exactly 1 steal, exactly 1 block. Let me know your answer for that one. Also had someone, now the name just escapes me, who just commented via the YouTube comment system watching live asking if he should drop Dennis Schroeder for Norris Cole. I'm all for dropping Schroeder in a standard league. I'm not sure that he's a great guy to own. I've talked about that a lot. But Norris Cole, he said, do you think Cole is close to return? I really doubt that Cole plays on Wednesday, and I'm not a massive Cole fan anyway. I would rather add someone like Shelvin Mack. I don't know who else is going to be available in your league. I would rather add Tony Douglas, to be honest, over Cole at the moment, because at least you know, but I would assume you're going to get a pretty decent game out of Douglas on Wednesday, and then move him on for someone else after that. I don't expect Cole to play in Wednesday's game. So that's something, I guess. He could play very well, and if he does, he's probably going to get 30 minutes and be decent, but no, I'm not confident in him playing. But as for Schroeder, he's not a guy that has to be held on to, I don't think. Let's get to the dud of the night. Yesterday's dud of the night was a Denver Nuggets player. It was Bill Barton. He was all right today, Barton, actually. Not great, not terrible. He was his teammate who struggled here, and that is Ken Fareed, who played just 15 minutes with that back issue, which is flaring up all too often. He had 7 points, 5 rebounds, an assist, not a lot else, 1 of 2 from the free throw line. He's been exceptionally up and down this season. It really started to look like a really strong second half stretch, but he's tailed off a bit. And his scoring's been up the last couple of weeks, but his rebounding is basically at season levels. He doesn't block, he doesn't steal, he doesn't assist, he doesn't hit threes. He's a below average free throw shooter, and he's a really good field goal percent guy. But I think you still have to own him, but it's really frustrating that at any time he's going to play 15 minutes, or he'll go for a 20 and 10 double-double in 27 minutes, and he'll have 7 and 5 in 12 minutes or something like that. It's extremely frustrating, but I think that you do have to own him, but he is right down the bottom of the list for me. That is the nightly awards. Pretty quick when you've got one guy capturing 3 of them. Let's look at the perfect DFS lineup now. Yes. Isaiah Thomas at point guard, 43.2, and Kyle Lowry, 44.3 on that second half of back-to-back. That's a massive night from Lowry. I was a little bit scared to use him in DFS because of that reason, but once DeMar DeRozan was out and Lowry was playing, then he was obviously in a much better spot. At shooting guard, Vic Oladipo, 41.8, and Sauce Castillo, Nick Stauskas, puts up 31.9. I think, if I remember correctly, I think I teased him a little bit yesterday just saying, you know what, don't completely write him out in a tournament. He's been looking a little bit better. I wouldn't have expected him to have probably his best game of the season, but still a nice outing. Small forwards, Boyan with 53.6, of course, and Rudy Gay with 41.1. Another out-of-the-blue performance at the power forward spot. Jason Smith, who was dreadful in the last game that the Magic played, he was brilliant here, 41.1. Thad Young, who I've spelled incorrectly on that thing, I've just noticed. Thaddeus Young, 49.2. And at center, of course, it's always Boogie Cousins, basically. 47.2 for Boogie, and that total would have given you 393.3 points. Had another guest come in for the triple ones. You guys aren't getting it right. You are Collins with Kemba Walker? No. And Buddha's Love Handles with Kent Bazemore? No. Keep on guessing, guys. And hey, if you guys aren't watching live and you listen to this later, you might be, someone might not get this during the podcast, so you can always tweet at me and we'll see who gets the prize at the end. Now, before we get into the games from Tuesday, we're going to have a quick word from our sponsor, and today that is SeatGeek. Have you ever been frustrated trying to buy your tickets online? Most sites make it complicated, and they all try to sneak in huge fees at checkout. That's not good. That's why you need to try SeatGeek. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. SeatGeek, yeah, if I'm heading over to the States, that's where I'm looking for my tickets. And I've just been looking. If you want to go and see the monstrous line of the night winner, Bojan Bogdanovic, you can get tickets to his game on March the 22nd against the Charlotte Hornets at the Barclays Center. $12. $12, and you get to see Bojan Bogdanovic, and you get to see Don Sloan. It doesn't get much better than that. But all joking aside, just $12 to see an NBA game, it's a pretty decent price. And SeatGeek has your best prices. Even the Bulls game against the Nets coming Thursday, it's $43. They're pretty decent prices for a game in Chicago where it's sold out every single game. These aren't expensive tickets. So make sure if you're looking to buy tickets, SeatGeek is the place you're going to. SeatGeek has taken all the work and hassle out of shopping for tickets. They pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place, so you save time and never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and SeatGeek will let you know if ticket prices fall. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. And before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detail maps to see the view from your seat. Best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. Unlike StubHub, they show you the full ticket price from start to finish and never try to trick you with huge fees on the checkout page. My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, enter the promo code, which is REDROCK, and that's one word. You can see that on the screen if you are watching along live. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code REDROCK today. Easy. And SeatGeek is a great product. It's a great site. There's a lot to do on there, and it helps support the podcast immensely if you go and enter that promo code. And I would be very, very grateful if you had 5 minutes to go and do that. It would be awesome. And you can also save yourself a little bit of money as well. All right, we're going to get into these games now and start looking at those games in a little bit more detail. I'm just going to bring up the box scores on the screen for you guys who are watching along on YouTube. There we go. Now, before we get into that, a couple more guesses coming in for this Triple One contest. It's captivating a nation. No one's got it right yet. Now, who are these guesses that have come in? We had Ewell Collins, who's just desperate to get this one right. He's guessed Russell Westbrook, and that is incorrect. Daniel Charles also guessed Russell Westbrook, and that is incorrect as well. So keep on throwing it out there, guys, and we'll see. I reckon by the end of this show, someone will get it. We'll see. If not, hey, keep on guessing, and we'll see how we go. Someone's bound to get it at some point. Surely, it's not that tough. There's only 450 players in the NBA. We'll get it eventually. The first game of the night was the Boston Celtics and the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers, that's a big win. The Celtics are in trouble without Jay Crowder. He is a massive part of what they do. I think they'll be really keen to get Kelly Olynyk back, because as much as people might dislike Kelly Olynyk and think that he's crap, he's actually really, really good, and he's a really key piece to what they can do in terms of being able to spread the floor. Now, Crowder was good in that role to a degree when he plays small ball four, enabling them to spread it out a little bit. But in a Linux sort of the other way, he enables them to have a stretch five out there. And it's going to be key for them to get back and get him back. They're in real danger of dropping out of that third seat. Onto the actual game itself, Isaiah Thomas was brilliant. 21-6-8, 2 steals, 3 triples and a block. Now, 5 of 18 shooting is not brilliant, but you sort of come to expect some off nights from Thomas in the field goal percentage department. Jared Sillinger was also great, 15 and 11. He hit a 3, had 2 steals and 3 assists. His season has been one of the more surprising ones. And Jonas Jerebko, he's one of my boys from back in the day. 17, 3 and 2 with 2 triples. I've always wanted him to get a big role on an NBA team. It's never worked out that way, because I think he can be a really effective 3-4 sort of guy. And he did it nicely here. When Olynyk comes back, his role is going to be limited somewhat, but that's a pretty good performance, and he will get some extra run with Crowder out too, and he'll take a lot of those Crowder stretch 4 minutes away. Amir Johnson, first time he's gone over 20 minutes, and I don't even know how long. 8 and 9 in 23 minutes for Amir. Nothing else, and it's impossible to own him. Marcus Smart got the start in front of Jay Crowder. 32 minutes for Smart, 12-4-2, and he had a triple one. His percentages are always going to be a worry, but if he's going to start and play 32 minutes, I think that you should be definitely looking at him in 12 team leagues. Now, he's only 57% owned, and he has to sort of fit what you do, but he can rack up steals. He can get you big rebounds from point guard position. He can hit threes. He can get assists. He can hurt your percentages. So watch all those things. Evan Turner struggled. I think he'll be better than this moving forward. 6-5-5. I think he is someone you want to own too. And Avery Bradley had just 10 points with 3 rebounds and 2 assists. Bradley has, he was red hot to start the season. He had a massive stretch early on. He's been a little bit cold, I think it's fair to say, for a pretty decent chunk of time. He's ranked almost 150th over the last 2 weeks. I don't think we should be dropping Avery Bradley, but he's definitely in a cold streak where he's only shooting 41% as opposed to 45% for the season, and that's dropping his value down. He needs to be that 45 guy, giving you 15 points and 2 triples to really have, you know, significant 12-team value, and at the moment, it's just not happening. Terry Rozier is getting extra run as well with Crowder out. He played 12 minutes, and it's an encouraging sign for his dynasty value. Wasn't overly sure about Rozier as a pick. He looked decent at Summer League, especially the last couple of games. He hasn't done much here, but the 2 games that he's had here with Crowder out, he's looked okay, and it gives me a bit more confidence that he is going to be able to have some sort of role or career in the NBA in the next few years. I think he's going to be a better player than what James Young is, and just an interesting guy to add into that mix. With the Pacers, Paul George was good. He was very good. 25-7, 4 assists, 4 steals, 1 block, and 2 triples. And contrary to what we normally get from Paul George, he was efficient. He went 9 of 16 from the field. Monte Ellis was good as well. 16-7-6 with 2 steals and 2 triples. And after a terrible start to the season, Monte has really come into his own. And he's basically doing exactly what you expect Monte Ellis to do. Miles Turner struggled. Just 21 minutes, 6-3. A steal and a block, still nice, but you still want to hold him. And Yami Himi had 13-6 in his 25 minutes. He was a bit limited in this one and not foul trouble related, which is not something that's been all that common for him. Lavoy Allen was good, 4-7 with 3 blocks. And Jordan Hill was good. He went 15-3 in 23 minutes. And that's the reason that Turner and Mihimi were somewhat limited as well, is that Allen and Hill playing off the bench were putting up some pretty big numbers. Rod Stuckey, 7 points in his 19 minutes. It's going to take a little bit for him to come into even 14-team league consideration. And Georgie Hill, just terrible. 10-5-3 with that 2 of 9 shooting. Now, I've seen it mentioned in a few places. I think Basketball Monster, the main one, about George Hill. What do you do? Do you drop him? You have to consider it. He's ranked 180th over the last month. He's 195th over the last 2 weeks. He's not doing anything. His shot is dreadful. He's shooting 33% from the field. Now, he was a 48% shooter last year. I think he's been horribly misused. I think that the addition of Monte Ellis has really hurt Hill, and I think that they'd be better with the ball in Hill's hands more than Ellis's. But we can't change that at this point. We have to adjust to exactly what's happening. And you're in the playoffs. It's do or die. In a roto league, I'm holding him because you don't have a playoff situation there. In the playoffs, it's do or die. You might have to piss him off. And if someone grabs him, your opponent grabs him, and he continues to suck, that's a double win for you. That's getting someone who's playing bad off your team, replacing him with someone better, and getting someone worse onto your opposition. And that's a big opportunity if that happens. So I'm definitely not against dropping George Hill. He's only ranked 90th on the season, so it's not like you're dropping a great top 50 sort of option. It really depends on who's out there, though, but I would be happy streaming him through for any of these guys who are running through little hot streaks, who have an increased opportunity at the moment. At this point of the year, you've got to do that sort of stuff. Now, I had another guest come through on the triple one. Daniel Charles at it again. Gasol, non-specific Gasol. I'm going to say no to both Gasols. Marc Gasol and Pau Gasol, no. And UL Collins, just desperation from UL. Boogie Cousins, no. Guys, keep on guessing and see if someone can get this one right. If you're just tuning in now, what we're looking for is the player who's had the most triple ones for the season. That's exactly 1 three-pointer, 1 steal, and 1 block. There's been 282 instances for the season, and there's a player. Which player has had the most of those instances? So if you just tuned in now, tweet me your guess at redrock_bball. The next game, the Denver Nuggets and the Orlando Magic. Gaz Harris, the ownership keeps rising. It's still too low, but he has to be owned. absolutely 18-3-3, two triples, three steals. He's going to be an animal, this guy. I really, really like what I'm seeing from him. The other guy who's an animal who also had a triple one, Nick Jokic, 14-6-4, a steal, a block, a triple. I can't wait to see this guy in 3 years' time. He looks phenomenal. And congratulations if you got him in a dynasty league, because you must have had massive balls to draft him. Because at the start of the season, he was sitting well behind Yusuf Nurkic, and in a lot of people's eyes, he was behind Joffrey Lavergne. And that's because that's how the Nuggets were playing them in the preseason. Now, I never bought into it. I didn't think that, I knew that Lavergne wasn't the better player than Jokic, but I had to look at it and go, well, Malone's playing Lavergne these big minutes, and he's getting double-doubles, so what's going to happen for Jokic? But if you happen to have faith in his talent, you're being very nicely rewarded here. Lavergne was actually right here too, 12-8 in his 23 minutes, but he's an exceptionally deep league guy. Emmanuel Mudiay, only the 27 minutes. He was still serviceable, 14-2-4 with two triples. 5 of 12 from the field. It is not good, but it's not horrific. It's better than DJ Augustine's 2 of 9. But Augustine was awesome as well, 12-4-8, three steals, two triples. If I own George Hill and DJ Augustine's there, I'm happy to make that move. Augustine's been clearly outperforming him lately, and that's what you need. Who is performing well at the moment? And I would be happy to make that move. Darrell Arthur also looking good here with Ken Fareed battling. 13-4-2, a triple, a steal in 28 minutes for Arthur. He had that when Gallinari went down, I was like, oh, look at Arthur, 14-10 leagues, add him. If he gets 26 minutes, he's going to be able to put some pretty decent numbers up, and it didn't happen. But it's starting to happen now. So your 16-team leaguers, I don't think that you I don't think you can really sleep on Darrell Arthur anymore. He's got to be looked at. Jakar Sampson, the minutes are just evaporating, which is good. 9 minutes, 2 points, no other stats for him. And my boy William Barton, 32 minutes, 15-4, no other stats. Hey, a much better shooting night, going 5-8, but still not a great performance, a pretty solid one, but nothing spectacular. On the Magic, the original my boy, Evan Fournier, 30 points, career high, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, 5 triples, elite shooting. Can't wait to see what they do with him in the offseason. He might move to another team, but I've been a big Evan Fournier fan for quite a while. He needs to be owned in every league. Vic Oladipo was great too, 23-4-6, a steal and 2 blocks, and these guys are just going to put up numbers for most of the season. Jason Smith played 28 minutes in this one with Nick Vucevic out, and Vucevic looks likely to miss some more time, by the way, so he might have to be someone you drop. Smith, 25-13 on 10-15 shooting, 1 assist, no other numbers. Now, Jason Smith has been a handy fantasy contributor in the past. I do not buy this at all. I am not going and streaming him in for 12-team leagues. Look, if Vuce misses another game and I'm in a 14-teamer, Smith's fine. Go and add him, but just don't expect anything like this sort of production. Dwayne Dedman got 20 minutes and he put up 0 points. And Smith was like that the other day. I think he had 1 point in the game in about 24 minutes. That will happen. Aaron Gordon, pretty nice night from him. 16 points, 2 triples, a steal and 2 blocks. Only the 3 boards, but 7 of 10 shooting. Obviously, he has to be owned. And with Lord Alfred Payton out of this one, they started Brandon Jennings. If you can understand what Scott Skiles is going to do, then please can you let me know in advance, because I never understand what moves he's going to make. 27 minutes for Jennings, 12-3-11, a steal and a 3. So this probably means that Jennings plays 4 minutes and goes scoreless in the next one, as has been Jennings' season this year and as has been the way that Skiles has handled things. CJ Watson was battling an illness, so maybe that necessitated the bigger run from Jennings. But I'm not adding Jennings outside of a 14-teamer, maybe, and hopefully if Well, not hopefully, but if Payton sits, then and we hear that Jennings is starting, then we can run with him. But he could also start and play 17 minutes in the next game. There is just no way of being able to predict what Skiles will do, because he doesn't even know what he's going to do half the time. And that's half the battle with him, because he's a terrible coach. Ersan Ilyasova had 6 points in his 21 minutes, and Mario Hezonja had 2 points in his 14 minutes. It is going to take Evan Fournier going down for him to have any relevance for the end of the season. Before we get into the next game, these guys are just desperately throwing in these guesses. UR Collins, KD, no. Daniel Charles, DeMarcus Cousins, no. UR Collins, Draymond Green, no. UR Collins, Wesley Johnson, no. UR Collins is just throwing in the guesses here. Keep them coming. I want to keep hearing your answers. The next game, the Philadelphia 76ers against the Brooklyn Nets. Nick Stauskas, that's a huge game from Stauskas, 18-7, 2 steals, a block, 2 triples, an assist. this was what I was hoping from him at the start of the season. I thought he's going to have a big role and he's going to have the talent and hopefully he's able to capitalize. Well, he wasn't. He's dealing with stress reactions in his leg and that really bothered him for most of preseason and big chunks of the season. Now, I'm not saying that Stauskas is good or he's even serviceable at this point, but this is pretty decent production. And with Bob Cove out, and it looks like Bob Cove's going to be out until about the 21st of March, so that's the start of next week. We haven't heard anything official on that yet, but that's sort of what it's looking like. He might need to be dropped, and Stauskas would be, need to be looked at, and he could even be streamed in a standard league. It probably wouldn't want to do it in a standard, but in a 14-team league, I reckon you got to look at Stauskas because it's going to be him and it's going to be Isaiah Cannon who are going to put up those numbers across the wing. And Stauskas is someone to look at. Speaking of Cannon, he if you want threes, there is no better guy out there at the moment. I mentioned the other day, he's a top 12 player over the entire NBA in three-pointers per game. He had 32 minutes here. He hit 5 triples for 20 points. Now, he gives you pretty much nothing else but scoring and threes. He was 5 of 5 from the free throw line, so he's good in that respect. And he ended the season as a top 120 guy over the last 2 months of last season on his ability to hit threes. In his last 7 games, he's hitting 3 triples a game. In the last month, he's at 2.6 triples a game. These are massive numbers, and they can be impactful. You get him for 4 games, and you get over 10 threes. That's big. It's really big. He's not good. He's not good, but he can hit threes, and he's bombing them at a pretty significant rate. He's hitting 37% of them, which is good, but he's taking a lot. He's at 7 attempts a game over the last month, and that's significant. That's what he's going to do, and we know how much Philadelphia needs shooters, and with Bob Cove out, they need more shooting. And so it's going to be Stauskas, it's going to be Cannon, who's going to be putting up those long-range shots. So if you need threes, not many better other options than Isaiah out there. Ishmith, 18, 3, and 6. And TJ McConnell had a decent game, 8 points only, but that's not why you own TJ McConnell. It's for his rebounds, for his assists, where he had 5 of those, and 2 steals. More of a deep league guy. Nerlens Noel, 18 and 6, 2 assists, a steal, a block. Nice numbers from Nerlens. And Carl Landry, 26 minutes in the start. I think he's going to hover around that mark, but he still can be productive. 10, 8 and 4, a steal and a block. He'll likely score more than that in most games, but yeah, it's hard to argue. Do you own him in a 12-team league? I don't hate it. I think you can definitely look at it. In a 14-team, I reckon you almost have to own him. Hollis Thompson bounced back after a stinker as well. 14, 3, and 2 with 2 triples. And he is another guy on the radar. Because of the Bob Cove injury, he's going to play minutes and he is going to be a 3-point contributor. He's not as solid a 3-point guy as what Isaiah Cannon is, but he can get hot and he can put up those numbers. So Hollis Thompson is another guy that you do have to consider. On to the Nets, Thad Young. 14 and 16 in 33 minutes. Big line. 4 assists, 2 steals, 3 blocks. That's huge from Thad. He's really had a bounce back season after quite disappointing time in Minnesota last year, but being able to put up big rebound numbers. He's an elite steals guy from the power forward position. I think it's him, Nerlens, and Paul Millsap is probably the top 3 steal guys as power forwards, and that can be extremely valuable as well because that enables you to get guards who don't necessarily get steals. If you get a power forward who gets you 2 a game, that means if your guard's only getting you 1 a game, then you sort of balance it out. You only need to average 1 steal a game across your roster to really be competitive and be really in the race to win steals each week. And if you get a power forward that's giving you 2 a game, and Nerlens Noel's a center giving you 2 a game, that's obviously really really interesting. Sean Kilpatrick, he's playing big minutes here for the Nets. 23 minutes, 19 points with 3 triples, 3 rebounds, and 2 assists. He's a deep league guy at the moment only, but what he's doing is he's cutting into Wayne Ellington's minutes, which is fine. He's not allowing Markel Brown to play big minutes, which, Markel Brown's okay, and I was hoping for a bit more of a breakout, and we sort of saw it, but Kilpatrick's scoring the ball really well, and he's shooting the ball sensationally as well. The Nets were actually at 52% in this game from the field, which is a massive number. Talked about this the other day about Donald Sloan's having a run where he's playing big minutes and putting up good games, so he's due to cede minutes to Shane Larkin, and it happened. Larkin played 24, he had 10 points, 2 assists, and 3 steals, while Sloan played 24 and went 9, 2, and 3. Such is the peril of owning Don Sloan. You'll probably see Larkin play 30 in the next one, and then 30 in the game after, and then go back to 10. This is what Tony Brown is doing. It makes no sense to anyone on the outside. Maybe it makes sense to him, but it is what it is, so that's why your reliability with Don Sloan is pretty low. Brookie Lopez, 18, 10, and 4. That's a solid night from him. And Wayne Ellington, there's just no point in owning Ellington, especially with Bogdanovich's emergence, with the presence of Sean Kilpatrick as well. Markel Brown, who I touched on, 8-5-2 in 24 minutes. He's a very deep league sort of player at the moment. All right, before we get into this next game, the guesses are flying in thick and fast. Avery Bradley, no. DeMar DeRozan, no. Paul Millsap, no. Chris Bosh, no. Eric Bledsoe, no. Keep them coming. Toronto and Milwaukee. Kyle Lowry. Off a back-to-back, this is a big effort for him. Now, he only had to play 28 minutes, so it was good that they were able to restrict his playing time here. But he was good. 25, 4-11, 4 triples, efficient shooting. Just amazing his season. And Bismack Biyombo, who started in place of Jonas Valanciunas, went 12-13 with 2 blocks in 25 minutes. This was your chance to own Biyombo, because Valanciunas' hand injury is not serious. He will likely be back for the next game, and Biyombo will go back to 18 or 19 minutes and won't do much with him. This was your chance to own him. If you missed it, I wouldn't fret. Pat had some foul issues. He only played 20 minutes, 14-6 with 2 triples, a steal, and 2 blocks. What is this Patrick Patterson we're seeing? Is this the Patrick Patterson that we have to look at in 12-team leagues? It's feeling like it, and it's pretty weird to say because he was dreadful for most of the season. In his last 4 games, he's a top 100 player. 12 points, 2.5 threes, 5.5 rebounds, 0.8 blocks on 49 and 100 from the free throw line. It's very hard to argue with those numbers. I'm not definitely not rushing out to get him, but it's trending in the right direction, and he's been getting minutes for most games, and he looks a lot better. Valanciunas sat this one out, as I mentioned. DeMar DeRozan also sat this one out. So one of my favorite second-round players from this year's draft, outside of Joshie Richardson in Miami, is Normie Powell in Toronto. And he got the start, and he was great. 35 minutes for Powell. 17-3-2, 3 triples, 1 steal, and 2 blocks. He is a very deep dynasty league guy that you do need to pay attention to. He is going to have a role in this league at some point. And if the Raptors lose DeRozan, I wouldn't be shocked to see Powell suiting up as the starting shooting guard next season. I think he's got tremendous potential as a player. Corey Joseph, 6 assists is nice, but 6 points and 3 rebounds, you leave him for your deeper formats. Jason Thompson got extra run with Valanciunas out, but that'll go back to being nothing. And Bebe Naguera, only the 4 minutes. I'd love to have seen more from Bebe. Luis Scola, 25. He had 7-7. I'd much rather Pat and Jimmy Johnson. He played 24 minutes and had 11 points. Terrence Ross, 11 points with 3 triples as well. Surely he's just a stream option if you want triples, and that's really it. The Bucks. Giannis Antetokounmpo, no triple-double, but he was bloody close. 18, 12, and 9 with 3 blocks. 6 of 12 from the field, but this free throw problem is a massive issue. 6 of 11 from the free throw line. He is single-handedly killing your free throws. And you can't do shit about it. You can't trade at this point of the season. You can't drop him. You can't bench him. But he's killing your free throw percentage. And it's really bizarre what's happening. He was never a great free throw shooter, but he also wasn't a guy who was going to completely obliterate that category. And that's basically where he is at the moment. So you might have to make waiver wire acquisitions to try and deal with that, because it's real and it's happening over the last 2 months. Or sorry, 2 weeks, a month. Chrissy Middleton, 12 points, 3 assists, 3 steals. Scoring wasn't there, but the 3 steals helps out. And Jabari Parker, 18, 4, and 2 on his birthday. Jared Bayless only got the 28 minutes in this one, as Tyler Ennis played 28 as well. 11 points for Bayless with a steal and a 3, while Ennis went 10, 4, and 3. Not adding Ennis outside of your 16-team leagues. And Bayless, I still think that he has 12-team league value, despite really struggling in the last couple of games. John Henson was back. He'd missed the last 20 games with that back issue without any real note on what was actually wrong or when he was going to be out, but he's returned. He played 6 minutes and had 4 points. He's obviously not going to be useful until he gets 19 minutes, and then he is just literally a block stream specialist. Greg Monroe, 8-9 in 29 minutes. Do you drop Greg Monroe? I'm going to say probably not, but as I talked about with George Hill, we're in playoff mode, and anything is on the table. He's ranked outside the top 100 for the last 2 weeks, and it's not ideal, but I don't think he's in the droppable category yet. He'd need to be a lot worse than what he currently is for me to really consider that. This is not a good game from him, but I'm not dropping him. Miles Plumlee went back to 14 minutes, so any value he had has evaporated now with the return of John Henson. Let's get to the next game, which is the Clippers and the Spurs, but a few more guesses have come in for that triple one question. Evan Turner, no. Jay Crowder, no. Nick Batum, no. And
percentages,
no. Keep them coming. The Los Angeles Clippers. and the San Antonio Spurs. The Spurs, big win, an easy win, really, in the end. Chris Paul, 22, 4, and 8 with 3 steals. That's really nice production. DeAndre Jordan, 16 and 14 on 7 of 8 shooting with a block. That's good as well. And JJ Redick chipped in 14 points with not much else. And the rest of the team, just crap. 23 minutes for Luke Marmute, a steal and a block. That's all you got out of that. And we know that he has no fantasy value. Jamal Crawford has no reason to be owned in 64% of leagues. Hopefully they're the 64% of teams that are eliminated. And Jeff Green, 15 points, 3 triples in 32 minutes with a block. That's a solid game, and he's playing a little bit better. I would much rather have him than Jamal Crawford, for instance, but he's not a must-own player. The Spurs, Kawhi, 25 and 4, 3 steals, great efficiency. What more do you expect from him? LaMarcus Aldridge, 17 and 6 with a couple of steals. And Patty Mills, after a bit of a down stretch, really big game from him. 15, 5 and 6 with 2 threes. It doesn't mean that I'm quick back on the Patty Mills bandwagon for standard leagues, but your 14-team leagues, you're a little bit happier that he put up that. Danny Green actually got hot from 3. He was 4 of 5. Hit 4 triples, 12 points, and a steal and an assist. Still not an awesome line, but obviously much better than some of the crap that he's been serving up. He should be owned in most leagues, clearly. Dave West, 8 and 6. Cool. Manu Ginobili, 13 points in his 16 minutes. He's more of a 14 to 16 team league guy. And Timmy Duncan went 6, 7, and 2 in his 22 minutes. Tony Parker also stunk. I was big on owning Tony Parker when he was dropped in quite a few leagues a while ago. At this point, you can cycle him out and go grab someone else. 2, 2, and 5 for Parker. Well, Boris Diaw had 0 points in his 13 minutes. Not sure why I needed to mention him, but I did. And Kevin Martin playing 12 minutes again. This is what he's going to do. He had 6 points in 12 minutes. He's not going to have any sort of factor as a fantasy guy moving forward. The last game of the night, the Sacramento Kings and the Los Angeles Lakers. Let's see what other guesses have come in. Kawhi Leonard, no. Chris Middleton, no. And Kawhi Leonard again, no. Haha, I've stumped you. The Kings and the Lakers. DeMarcus Cousins, 22 and 8, 3 assists, 3 steals, 4 blocks, bad field goal percentage, but 13 of 15 from the line is a big bonus, and just a typical big boogie night. Didn't mean that pun. Rudy Gay, 20 and 8, 3 steals and a block. I talked about yesterday he'd been really down and he was primed for a big game. That probably classifies as a big game for Rudy. And Rajon Rondo had 9 points in his 37 minutes, 6 rebounds, 12 assists, and 4 steals. So doing exactly what you want him to do with the bonus of hitting 4 free throws, all 4 of them. Darren Collison playing just a stack of minutes, 41 minutes, 22 points, 6 assists, a steal, and a 3. If he is somehow available in your league, please make it so it's not. And Willie Cauley-Stein played 32 minutes. 8 and 7 with a steal and a block. I'm never going to understand what George Karl is going to do, and I won't proclaim to know what he's going to do. Cauley-Stein had been buried for a long time, but he has played almost 30 minutes in the last 3 games. If you want field goal percentage, if you want rebounds, if you want defensive numbers, you have to look at Cauley-Stein. As unpalatable as it might be to get a rookie who doesn't score on a team where George Karl has been killing him, you have to look at Cauley-Stein. It is clear that he is better than crap like Quincy Acey and even Kostakoufos, who I do really like. Cauley-Stein, they should be trying to develop him, and hopefully someone's had some sort of word to George Karl and said, come on, mate, can you just look at it? Can you put him in? Can you play him? And we did. Hopefully it sticks. The Lakers. This team, this coach. I don't know if I mentioned this the other day, but Byron Scott said that in a blowout situation, I don't even know if it was a blowout situation, whatever it was, a late game situation, he didn't play the young guys because they've already played that spot enough. Now, Byron, I know you're a fan of the show, so if you're listening, just get a bit of paper out, grab a pen, and take a notes down. There's no such thing as too much experience. We're not talking about a video game here when you've got a health bar and you put up to 100 and guys like Russell and Jordan Clarkson will just go and they'll just go, you know what, Byron, we're done. Our experience is all topped up. Can we just leave the experience for later on when it drops down a little bit? It's not how it works, Byron. It's not. Play these guys 30 plus minutes. Not this bullshit where Robert Sacre plays 22 minutes. We don't need to spread the rotation out completely. Why is Meta World Peace playing 19 minutes? Why is Ryan Kelly playing 21 minutes? Why isn't Jordan Clarkson playing minutes? This guy is a terrible coach. Is he worse than Kurt Rambis? It's pretty close. He's had a longer period during the season to show us that. Rambis is dreadful, and he's another one that I'll talk about later. Sam Mitchell. Sam Mitchell's clearly better than these two guys, and that's a real real scary thing. What do you do with the Lakers, guys? Real pain in the ass, because they only had two games this week anyway, and then and Scott does bullshit like this. Do you have to drop these guys with one game left this week? You might have to, and you might have to make these decisions. If I'm dropping someone, it's probably Clarkson that's going before Russell. It's Randall that's going before either of them, because Randall's just not as good of a fantasy player. Despite him going 14-11-3 with two steals here, he's not as good as those two guys. But he's, I don't know, Byron's just, it's just real tough to deal with. Marcelo Huertas was decent, 8-5-6 in 20 minutes, but he shouldn't be playing 20 minutes when Russell and Clarkson are healthy. Lou Williams got 24 minutes, and he was good, 17-4, two threes, a steal and a block. Byron loves him. So in a 14-team league, you got to own Lou Williams, I think. You have to own him, but with one game left, it's probably not the wisest thing to go and add him now. But you look at the situation, you look at where you're placed and where your ads are, and you might want to own him and grab him for next week. But he's someone who's not stay away from or anything like that. Just a real pain in the ass with the way that Byron Scott runs this team, obviously. No more guesses coming in. You guys are stumped on the who's had the most triple ones this season. Remember to tweet at me at redrock_bball with your answer. We are going to have a quick break now, and then we're going to look at the games for Wednesday from a DFS perspective.
This is the part with just the guitar, while we wait on the bass and drums. I'll sing of love and you from afar. Well, here they come and now me and the sky run a roll. As we hit the halftime break, the chorus let you know you can't see what I see.
Wednesday, that's the one. Had another guest come in for the another couple of guests has come in for the triple one question. Marvin Williams was one of them. Victor Oladipo was another one, and you're both incorrect. So I do apologize. Al Horford coming in as a guest as well, also incorrect. You guys are. There's going to be lots of guesses here. I wonder how long it's going to take. I hope we can get it by the end of the live show. So keep on going. Let's look at these games now for DFS. The first one is the Orlando Magic and the Charlotte Hornets. There is no spread for this one yet. I guess we're waiting to see if Nick Vucevic plays. I'd be shocked if he did. Also, Lord Alfred Payton is questionable with that elbow sprain. Looking at point guards, Kemba Walker's at 8,900. That's pretty expensive for Kemba, but I don't hate using him here. I think that 40-plus points against the Magic, who are likely going to be without Payton, and the Hornets are pretty bloody good at the moment, especially at home. Kemba is definitely in play here. As for the Magic point guards, you want to see what they do with Payton first. And Brandon Jennings put up 33 today. He's just as likely to have three in the next game. CJ Watson at 3,600 is interesting to look at too. But if we hear that Jennings is starting, minimum salary in a tournament, absolutely fine to me. I think that he'd be fine looking at there, but be prepared to be let down. Lord Alfred Payton, if he plays, we're not going to be looking at him. I wouldn't have thought. Shooting guards, Vic Oladipo, if Payton's out, he becomes a great option. He's always a pretty good option anyway. At 7,000, he dropped 42 today. 35 feels like a baseline number for him. On the on the Hornet side of things, Courtney Lee, he's still priced at under 4,000, so that makes him mildly attractive. In a decent matchup here, if you're looking for that cheap player, you can maybe use Courtney Lee. I probably wouldn't, but it's not a horrific move. Jeremy Lin is not someone I'm looking at, and Jeremy Lamb was a DMP CD in the last game too, so probably won't be using him. Small forwards, Nick Batum is at 7,500, really been crushing value lately, averaging 39 across the last three. Actually, I need to interrupt the podcast here because we have a winner in the most triple ones for the season. Tyler Durden, I'm assuming not his real name, who's on Twitter at KneeJerKing, has got it correct. The answer is Carmelo Anthony. Mallow has had 7 triple one games this season, and that is exactly 1 3, 1 steal, and 1 block. Mallow is the leader. Second place is Jim Butler. He has had 5 of those, and there's a gaggle of players with 4. But Mallow, the surprise leader with triple ones, with 7. So congratulations to Tyler, if that is your real name. You guessed it, Mallow is the correct answer. So thank you to everyone who participated in that. Back to this one. Evan Fournier is at 5,600. I think that you almost have to use Fournier. He's been putting up significant value almost every night. The problem is if there's a blowout, then he gets 10 minutes chopped off his playing time, and that really hurts. He dropped 37 today. He's still averaging 30 across his last 5. He's priced at 5,600. It's a little bit volatile, but I feel really comfortable with using Fournier. Power forwards. Marv Williams, his surprise season continues. He's at 5,900, and he gives you basically 5,900's worth of value, which is valuable in itself. His last 5 games have ranged from 27 to 33 points. That's really good, and that's really solid 5x value. But if you want more, I reckon you have to look in other directions. Jace Smith, 3,600. He dropped 41 today. Yep, 41 points for Jason Smith, as I touched on earlier. He is exceptionally up and down, but in a tournament, when you know you can get 40-point upside, which you probably won't again, but you know, even 30-point upside, you have to consider it. Cody Zeller at 4,400. No. Frank Kaminsky at 3,500. Just not really getting the value there. And 6,700 for Aaron Gordon. Despite how well he's playing, he's not getting enough minutes, and he's not reaching that value. So he is not someone that I'm interested in there at the center position. Dwayne Dedman at 3,500. He played 20 minutes today and had 3 points. So I don't think we're really going to be too interested there. Al Jefferson at 5,000. That is too expensive. The Oklahoma City Thunder and the Boston Celtics. The Thunder are favored by 3.5 points, and the total is 220.5. So we've got a pretty decent total here. The injuries, we're likely to see Deion Waiters back after that personal tragedy that befell him, and Kelly Olynyk is doubtful with his shoulder issue. At the point guard spot, Marcus Smart is at 4,600. He's been underperforming definitely, but the projections really love him here. At 4,600, we know he can go for 30 points. He can go for 30-plus points. You know, Russell Westbrook, not the greatest defensive point guard. Marcus Smart is a great tournament option to me. I think that he can have a big game here. Isaiah Thomas I love as well at 7,900. 40 points against Russ Westbrook is not a tough thing to do, so he is another good option. And on the other side, Westbrook at 10,700, when you take on the Celtics, it's not usually great for a point guard's value. So I reckon I'd rather go in a different direction than use Russ here. Now, he was big in the last game, but 59 points in the last game brought his average to 43 across the last 3, which at 10,700 is nowhere near enough. Shooting guards. Avery Bradley, definitely been up and down. He's at 5,200. I don't mind using him here. I think he's an okay tournament option, but cash, it's risky. The Thunder, Anthony Morrow, Randy Foy, Andre Roberson, Deion Waiters. No. Small forwards. Kev Durant, he's at 10,300, so the price has dropped a bit, but his production's dropped as well. He's averaging under 40 in his last 3 games. Still in 34 minutes, is at 38, which is okay, but it's clearly not where it needs to be. Without Jay Crowder, probably helps Durant a bit here, so I wouldn't be completely steering away from him, but I don't think that he's screaming out as the best option. There's another expensive small forward that I would rather use in today's slate. 5,900 for Evan Turner, a real disappointing game in the last one, but you need him to get to 30 points, which he does have an opportunity to do, but I'm still not necessarily, you know, overly in love with it. The Thunder have been able to reduce the small forwards' output pretty recently. Kyle Singler, he's not worth it either. Power forwards, Jared Sullinger, He is at 6,600. He has been killing it lately. A 35 average over his last five. His lowest score in his last five has been 24. Now, there is always Stephen's shenanigans that can happen, but with the injury to Olynyk and Olynyk not likely to play, then Salinger's been pretty consistent around that 28 to 30 minute mark, and you should be able to get close to 35 points out of Salinger. Serge Ibaka has been terrible for most of the season, but a nice bounce back of 29 points yesterday. He's priced at 5,400. This is not expensive for Serge Ibaka. The Celtics, we've known all season to be, you know, pretty lenient against opposition big men. So 5,400 for Serge Ibaka, when he can have 40-point upside, I reckon it's a great tournament play. Jonas Jerebko at minimum salary was really great today. Do you use him? I reckon you're going to be... It's tough to do, but... He could work out, but I probably wouldn't. Centers. I love both the Thunder guys here. Enes Kanter has been just ridiculous, averaging 33 across his last three games. He's at 5,200, but I do not trust it really for cash games because he can go back. He's only playing 24 minutes, and it's not much. He can go back and give you 18 minutes for 6 points. That's the problem, but he's been absolutely destroying at the moment. His lowest score in his last five is 26, and that is 5x value. That's his lowest score in his last five. The other one, Steve Adams at 4,300. If you want to go cheaper, Steve Adams is a 22 average guy across his last three. He's got 24, 25, 28 point upside here against Boston, I would say, because they are so poor at allowing points for centers. He's in a real nice spot. Tyler Zeller, just not happening. It could happen, but I don't really believe in it. Dallas at Cleveland. The Cavs are favored by 9.5. The total is 208.5. Now, the Cavs did mention that towards the end of the week, they're going to be looking at resting players. They've got three games in four nights with a back-to-back across the weekend. So they're going to play here, but at the end of the week, you're going to lose a game from some of your Cavs players, I'd say. At point guard, Darren Williams is at 5,600. He is a solid guy at 5,600 to give you 27 to 30 points. That's sort of the range that you're looking at with him, which is fine, but the upside's not massive. JJ Barea at minimum salary. He's playing Kyrie, but no. Kyrie himself at 7,300 has been really solid as well. He's averaging 35 points across the last five, which is, you know, obviously pretty good, but it's not spectacularly good. Darren Williams, despite how bad you might think he is, him and the Mavericks are actually reducing opposition point guard scoring by a little bit. So does that rule Irving out? No, it doesn't, but he doesn't become really high up on my list. Ray Felton had a day out in the last one, but I don't really trust in that. And Matthew Dellavedova is minimum salary, and his minimum salary for a reason. The shooting guards, J.R. Smith at 4,400, always a tournament play, never a cash game play. Wes Matthews, never an anything play. And Iman Shumpert at 3,500, really, he's not an anything play either. So not a lot of value at the shooting guard spot. Small forwards. This is the guy that I like. LeBron James, 9,800. He's under 10,000. You feel like, you know, 40 points is almost a lock. Well, it is. He's averaging 41 across his last... No, sorry. His lowest score is 41 across his last five. His high score is just 44, but you would hope that you can get a 50-point outburst from LeBron, and that should be enough. So I would rather spend that 500 less on LeBron than I would on KD and hope that I'm just going to get 45 to 50 points and anchor my lineup. Chandler Parsons, dominating. He's at 7,100, so the salary has risen, and it's not a great matchup against Cleveland, but can you expect him to keep going at this rate? Look, he's been an awesome, you know, seasonal player for a big stretch. I highlighted that on yesterday's show. He can be considered in your DFS lineups. Justin Anderson, Richard Jefferson, probably not. Power forwards, Kevin Love, 6,700. He's always got blow-up potential. He can go big. And that means you can look at him in a cash game and going up against Dirk, it's not a tough matchup. And David Lee is the other option, which is even less of a tough matchup. Love has some sneaky appeal. He's a contrarian tournament option, I think. Dave Lee at 4,800. Yeah, he's been getting extra minutes, but he hasn't been putting up those just stupid lines to start the season. To start his tenure in Dallas. At 4,800, I don't believe in David Lee. I won't be spending up on him. Tristan Thompson at 47. Channing Frye has cut into his minutes. Forget about it. And Dirk at 7,400. I've been going on about Dirk's salary being too high for a big stretch, but he has been really killing it lately, averaging 39 across his last five games. Now, the Cavs do reduce power forwards pretty significantly, but Dirk is an okay option, I think. I don't think you should be discounting him here. The centers, Tim Mozgov, you can discount him as much as you want. Same as Zaza Pachulia, who has just fallen off a complete cliff, and I again, I cannot understand it. I wish I had the ability to go in there and ask these coaches and go, "What? Why is he the only one that's subject to rest?" Seems like a logical question. Point guards. Johnny Wall. Oh, next game. Sorry, completely forgot to tell you that. Chicago at Washington is the next game. There is no spread for this one because we have injuries. We have no Pau Gasol. Obviously, we do not know if Derrick Rose is going to play. Jim Butler is probable. He sat out practice with a knee issue. And on the Wizards side, Brad Beal and Allen Anderson both sat out practice. Beal with his pelvis problem and Anderson with his ankle issue. I would say if any of those two are going to sit, it is going to be Anderson. He obviously had ankle surgery in the offseason and then copped a kick in the ankle with a bit of a twist in the game on Monday. So that means I would be I'd be shocked if he actually played. Point guards. Johnny Wall, 9,400. He's a 43 average across his last five. Against Derrick Rose, this is fine to go and use John Wall. I would much rather use John Wall at 94 than Russ at 10,700. Rose, on the other hand, at 7,000. I don't even think he's going to play. Not a good matchup. Forget about it. And Ramon Sessions at 3,800. If Beal happens to sit, Sessions becomes interesting at less than 4,000, but not all that interesting. Shooting guards, Brad Beal, no chance. Jim Butler, 8,600. He only played 34 minutes in the last one, which is a bit of a rest for him, which is how dumb that is. He'll likely be back up into pretty decent minutes, but his production over his last five games is only at 35. And at 8,600, I want him doing more than that. Do I think he can do more here? I do, but I don't trust it in his second game back from this second bout of knee soreness. Etwan Moore at 4,600. Been really good lately. 30 points in the last game, 25 across the last five. If Rose plays, and I'm not touching Moore. If Rose is out, Moore is going to play as the point guard, and he does become a very interesting guy to look at. And he can be that solid 25 to 30 point player at that less than 5,000 salary, which is useful. Garrett Temple, if Beal and Anderson both sit, you might throw into a tournament, but he is dreadful. And Justin Holiday would probably require Butler and Rose to sit out for me to have much interest in using him. Small forwards. Otto Porter, I've bagged this guy mercilessly over the last week or so, but he has turned it around. He's played 30-plus minutes in each of the last three games. He's at 4,500, which is a cheap salary, and he gets the Bulls' defense on the wings, which is really not good. Yeah, 25 points is all he really needs to turn it into a profitable night, so I'm fine with him. And on the flip side, Nick Mirotic at 5,100. Your big game in the last one, 27. At 5,100, I think Mirotic is a fine play in cash and tournament lineups. Mike Dunleavy is questionable with an illness. I don't think we'd be using him anyway. And Dougie McDermott dropped 34 points in the last game. He's at 3,800, and that's obviously a massive return, but do we expect him to shoot as red-hot as he did against the Raptors? I sure don't, but if Dunleavy's out, then the minute should be there for McDermott, and he's not a horrible guy to look at if Dunleavy's out. Power forwards, Markieff Morris at 5,000. We know how much of a bump the Bulls get. At 5,000, that's not expensive. He put up 26 in 24 minutes in the last game for the Wizards against the Pistons when they destroyed them. This is as good a matchup as it gets for power forwards. Can Markieff get... If he gets 30 points, it's tremendous. I would gather that not many people will use Markieff. Could you be the guy that stands out and uses him in a tournament and it helps you? I reckon there's a big chance that he's a helpful player. Taj Gibson at 5,300 put up a nice game in the last one. Without Powell, he should be considered. Nene at 4,100, actually playing really well at the moment. A 23 average across his last three, and it's a great Bulls bump here. So he's in play for a cheap tournament option. And Bob Portis, no thanks. Jared Dudley, no thanks. Centers. Marcin Gortat, hey, give him minutes and maybe we'll get interested. He's at 6,200. It's too expensive and we just don't know what he's going to play, and that's a real pain in the ass. Detroit and Atlanta. The game is a pick'em. There is no spread for this one yet. The total is 197.5. No real injuries to be concerned about, no questionable players or anything like that. Reggie Jackson's at 6,600. He was dreadful in the last game, and that salary just feels too high in this matchup against Atlanta, so we'll leave him alone. Jeffy Teague at 6,400. That's too expensive for Teague as well. And an interesting thing today, I don't know if anyone's seen the Vertical podcast with Chris Mannix, where they've got Dennis the point guard on there. And I'm deliberately not saying his surname, because we've had multiple conflicting reports on how to say his surname. The most common one, and the way that I've been saying it, has been Schroeder. I heard him on Chris Mannix's podcast, and he didn't say Schroeder. He said it with a German accent, and I'll try not to be too offensive, but he was talking about, you know, I don't want to be Dirk Nowitzki, I want to be Dennis Schroeder. It was Schroeder. It wasn't Schroeder. It was no U, it was O. So, do I go back to calling him Dennis Schroeder? Because he called himself Dennis Schroeder. So what is it? Or is it? Or is the Schroeder with the German accent Schroeder? It did not sound like Schroeder. I listened to it multiple times because I was like, why am I calling this guy the wrong name when he's calling himself Schroeder? Or maybe I just have to say it in my my imitation Arnold Schwarzenegger accent. So, Dennis Schroeder at 4,400. Nah, not using him. I just wanted to get that out there because I was just confused hearing it and thinking, that's not how I say it. That's not how I've been told to say it. It's not Schroeder. It's Schroeder. This is all semantics, I'm sure, but hey, I'm sure you'd want your name pronounced if you're in the NBA as well, or pronounced correctly. The shooting guards. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is at 5,200. He's been on a pretty nice run of form. At 5,200, that is not expensive for him. You can get 25 points out of him pretty comfortably, I reckon. Kyle Korver at 39 is a nice tournament option. He's actually not a horrible cash game play, but the Pistons have been relatively good against shooting guards. Lately, not so much, but a lot of that is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope missing some time and easing himself back in. 3,900 for Korver, though. He gets you 20 points and you've smashed 5x already. So that's something to look at with him. And we know that he can get hot and he can have some big games. It doesn't happen often, but it could be enough if you're looking to get some cheap players in there. Tim Hardaway, Kirk Heinrich, Lamar Patterson, we don't need to worry about them. Small forwards Kent Bazemore is at 4,600. He has not been living up to even that price tag, averaging just 21 across his last five. Yeah, I'd go in a different direction. Marcus Morris is at 52. I'd also go in a different direction. He's averaging under 25 across his last five. And Thabo Sefolosha on fire. He's averaging 21 points across his last three. He's at 3,800. I don't have the balls to really recommend using Thabo, but the numbers lately have been pretty good. Stan Johnson, no. Power forwards, Paul Millsap, he is the name of the game here. At 8,000 though, and the Pistons have been tremendous against defending power forwards. Millsap's averaging basically 40 points across the last five. You expect a bit of a drop against Detroit, so I'm not sure that I would want to have much confidence in him. Toby Harris, on the other hand, has now dropped under 6,000. He's at 5,800. The Hawks are good in terms of allowing points for power forwards, so Toby is in play to me after a real stinker against Washington as well. Chris Humphreys, no. Centers, Al Horford. 7,000 for Horf. No, it's a good matchup for him, but not really doing it at the moment. But I think in a tournament you can use him. He's not a stay away. With Andre Drummond at 7,900, I'm not loving using him at all. Now, the Hawks do allow big men some big numbers, but Budenholzer's a Spurs guy, so hacking is going to come into play, and that means that Aaron Baines in a tournament comes into focus, definitely. He's at 3,500. You could use him. Now, Drummond might not get hacked. He might not get pulled, but it could happen. I'm definitely not going to be putting trust in Andre Drummond in this one. Minnesota at Memphis. And whenever I see Memphis on the list to talk about, I just shudder because I don't even know I don't know what's going to happen with this lineup, with this rotation. There's just so much bullshit happening. Let's start with the point guards. Rick Rubio, 6,900. The slow pace affects him to a degree. You need him to go for 35 points. It doesn't feel like it's a great spot, but if he's facing up against Bryonte Weber and Ray McCallum, then maybe. Speaking of Ray McCallum, he's at 4,000. That feels too high. I'd run him at minimum salary in a match against Rubio, who's a really good defender. He could get 30 minutes, but I'm not using him outside of any tournaments. Same with Bryonte Weber at 3,500, who's played big minutes and produced very little in terms of production. The Grizzlies also signed another guard today, Xavier Munford. If you never heard anything about Xavier Munford, that's fair enough. He's played in the D-League the last 2 years for Bakersfield. He looks okay. He can get some assists. He's not a bad rebounder. He's a decent three-point shooter. He's a decent field goal percentage guy. Unless we see him as a 30-minute guy, then his DFS value is going to be pretty low, I'd imagine. But he is just another guard to throw into this mix in Memphis. Shooting guards, Lance Stephenson, 5,600. Is he going to play? That is the question. If Lance plays at 5,600, I love it. I think that there is easy 30 points for Lance. If he doesn't play, there's no chance. If he doesn't play, he's getting a zero. But if you hear during the day positive news, I love using him. Zach LaVine at 5,700. He had a massive game in the last one, but it's only 32 points. He just doesn't have a massive upside. I reckon he's okay to use, but definitely not a tournament guy to look at. Tone Allen is at 4,500. If you're looking for cheap shooting guards, he is okay. Now, Kyle Korver is the other one, but I think Allen's going to be more likely to get you that 22, 23 points as a consistent base, especially if Vince Carter is out. And if Lance is out as well, then there's even more for Tony Allen to do. Small forwards, Matty Barnes is a great tournament option to look at. He is at 5,600. Really hard to trust in cash, but even with these injuries, I feel a little bit more confident in using him. Shabazz Muhammad, no. Wigo. Andrew Wiggins at 6,600. He dropped 35 in the last game. I'm feeling a lot more comfortable with using him here. I'm not really sure that Matt Barnes and Memphis can reduce him. I think that 35 points should be a pretty decent spot for him to go for. Vince Carter at 3,900. You have to look at him if he plays, because he can get you 25 points. He's actually averaging 25 points across the last three in just 22 minutes. You have to look at him without much confidence, but you have to go, okay, have I got some other big names and big price guys in here and I need a less than 4,000 small forward? You look at him, definitely. The power forwards, Jermichael Green has been dreadful. Now, Zach Randolph has already been ruled out, but I'd be okay with using Green. He's at 6,000, so the salary's come back down. I would expect a bit of a bounce back game here. Fine with him. Definitely not in a cash game, though. Jarrell Martin was big in the last game, but they lost by 50. Now, Alex Stepherson put up 30 points. They lost by 50. I'm not trusting Jarrell Martin. I'm not trusting Stepherson. And Green is probably the guy that I'd use, but it's a very, very gray area. Gorgie Jing, 6,300. Giving you 30 points a game at the moment, which is okay, but probably not good enough. Centres, Carl Anthony Towns has been a little bit depressed with his numbers lately, only averaging 32 across the last three. He's down to 8,600 now, so that's more appealing. I'm actually fine with using him here. I think that the 40-point mark is something he should be looking at against this banged-up Memphis team. The Clippers and the Rockets is the next one that's up. The Rockets are actually favored by 2.5, which is odd to me. I feel like Vegas knows something that I don't. The Rockets favored by 2.5. The total is 214. I've got here on my notes that Terrence Jones is questionable, and that is strictly talking about his basketball ability. Paul Pierce is also questionable for the Clippers. Point guards, it's really hard to look at anything that the Rockets did in the last game because they smashed the Grizzlies by those 50 points. 5,000 for Beverly. He'd been a little bit off his game, but he did bounce back, not using him against Chrissy Paul. And on the flip side, Chris Paul against Patrick Beverly, not a good spot when I'm spending 10,000. I'd much rather take John Wall going up against the Bulls. Austin Rivers, Jason Terry, Pablo Prigioni. Pablo Prigioni revenge game? Probably not. Shooting guards, JJ Redick at 4,800. He's been fine, but just not getting you close to 25 points often enough. I would rather go in a different direction. Jim Harden has been definitely depressed in what he's been doing. 10,300 for him, only averaging 37 across the last three. You feel like a big game is going to come at some point for Jim. And, yeah, not sure I really go in a cash game for him. I'd be okay with it. But the Clippers have been really good, and JJ Redick's been really good at reducing the opposition shooting guard's ability to score. So that makes me probably want to hold off on Harden and look at him in a tournament. If he was playing another opponent, I'd be more confident in him. Small forwards. Whew. Trevor Reza is under 6,000. He's at 5,900, but I don't care. Wes Johnson, no. Corey Brewer, no. Paul Pierce, no. KJ McDaniels, no. Luke Marmute, no. Jeff Green is at 5,200. Probably not. Michael Beasley. He's at 3,900. He dropped 31 in the last game. He's averaging 26 across his last three. He's at 3,900. Tournaments. I think that you look at Beasley, but you don't get too excited. But there's something happening with Beasley. Power forwards, the Houston power forward situation. Clint Capella, Donatas Motiejunas, Montrezl Harrell, Terrence Jones, Josh Smith. The Clippers power forward situation. Jeff Ayers, Brandon Dawson, who's, I think, in jail at the moment. Yeah, let's move on to the centers. Dwight Howard versus DeAndre Jordan. Are we going to have a hack fest here? This could be the worst game to watch of the season. But both of these guys are interesting fantasy guys. 7,900 for Dwight. I really like 7,900 for Dwight. 40 points and he's 5X. I think that he has got a big opportunity here. DeAndre Jordan is $600 more expensive. He's averaging less than Dwight over the last three. He's averaging less than Dwight over the last five. I'm definitely not spending $600 extra to take him when he's been underperforming or getting outperformed by Howard. The New Orleans Pelicans and the Sacramento Kings. Drew Holiday is at 7,800. I don't mind using him. This is a great matchup. Point guards feast against the Kings. He has been a little bit down lately, not playing as many minutes, but I think this could be a big minute situation for Drew and a big production session. All he needs is 40 points to really drive home that value. On the other side, Darren Collison at 5,300 feels just ridiculously low. He's averaging 26 across his last five. The minutes have been up for him. you know, 30 points should be a pretty decent aim. Rajon Rondo at 8,000, he's not getting anywhere near that lately, so no. Norris Cole at 57, I would have hoped his injury would have dropped his salary down. I don't think he plays anyway. Tone Douglas at 4,500, if Cole is out at 4,500, I think you have to use Tony Douglas. He had 42 in the last game, he's averaging 31 across his last three. At 4,500, I think he is one of the must-play guys. Shooting guards. 3,500 for Marco Ballinelli. Cool, let's move on to the small forwards. Rudy Gay at 6,200. Massive game against the Lakers. He now gets to face off against Alonzo G and Dante Cunningham. Hardly tough guys to go up against. Does he get 30 points? I reckon he's got a pretty good chance to get 30 points, Rudy Gay, so I'm definitely not steering clear of him. Luke Babbitt has been a massive surprise packet lately. He's at 3,900. If Norris Cole plays, then forget about Babbitt. If Norris Cole doesn't, you can get 20 points out of Luke, and that might really help you when you're looking to fill in the rest of your roster. So don't completely discount him, as weird as it sounds. Power forwards. Willie Cauley-Stein is at 3,700. The minutes have been up for him. He hasn't had a big outburst, but I think you can expect 20-plus from him if he gets starters minutes, and that is fine at 3,700. Tone Davis, great matchup against the Kings. 10,100, 50 points is the aim, I'd say here. Ryan Anderson at 5,600 is playing an increased role. They actually sat Omer Asik in the last game and gave Anderson more minutes. He's strictly a tournament guy, though. He's really hard to rely upon. Dante Cunningham, Quincy Acey, there's not much happening there. Boogie Cousins, he was really good last time against the Pelicans. He's at 11,100. It is expensive, but you can almost lock in 50 points from Boogie. Even when he has a slightly off night, he puts up 47 like today. He is probably the best high-priced guy that I like on the board. The rest of the centers, Costa Koufos, Omer Asik, Kendrick Perkins, there is zero interest in those guys. The last game of the night, the New York Knicks and the Golden State Warriors. And I've talked about it a lot with Kurt Rambis, but he is just doing a horrific job. And the latest news out of New York that Phil Jackson might want to coach home games only, they are kidding me. Now, I'm glad that Melo came out and said, "Nah, mate, that's not happening," or "No, I'm not standing for that," whatever he said, because that is just ridiculous. Kurt Rambis is horrible. And again, if your organization needs Kurt Rambis to push his veterans 40 minutes a night to prove that he can coach, then he's not the right coach. Because prove you can win with the players who are going to be there. Prove that you can develop the players. Prove that you've got a system that makes sense. Be process-focused rather than results-focused. These results are the biggest... they're fake. A last-second win against the Lakers is fake because you pushed your veterans 40 minutes. I hope it doesn't happen. I'm going to knock on wood. When Melo does his knee, Rambis should be fired immediately. Not even immediately. He should be fired, no payments. And Phil should be fired too if he's allowing this. If Melo hurts his knee and he's out for a long period of time, that is, it's almost criminal what they're doing. I feel sorry for you if you're a Knicks fan. Point guards. That being said, 4,200 for Jose Calderon and he's playing him 57 minutes a game. You got to look at it. He's averaging 25 across his last three games. And at 4,200... and you're playing against the Warriors, who do allow point guards to put up numbers. Now, Calderon's going to get his ass kicked by Steph Curry, but that doesn't matter to Kurt Rambis. Calderon's a veteran. He's been there, man. He knows what to do. He's going to get roasted, but Rambis is going to play him 35, and he's going to stay out there. He's going to get his stats. He's going to get some shots up. He's going to get absolutely pantsed, but he's going to stay out there, and he's going to play minutes, and that's what we're looking at in DFS. Steph is at 10,400. It's a real good matchup for Steph. That salary is really nice as well. But how far up are they at the end of the third quarter? Does Steph need to play the third quarter? Does he get to 30 minutes? It is a risk, definitely. I would probably look at him in a tournament and not a cash game. Shooting guards. Klay Thompson, same story. Can't look at him in a cash game because we just don't know. He played just 26 minutes in the last game, really restricted. And his form actually lately has been a little bit down. Is it 6,900 now? The salary's dropped, but really not that keen. Now, Langston Galloway not giving me much at the moment. He's at 3,700, though, so if he gives you 20 points, that's returning value, and it's a nice matchup for him. Aaron Aflalo is going to continue to come off the bench behind Sasha Vujicic. Kurt Rambis. For standard leagues, Aaron Aflalo, you know my thoughts on him all season. If he's playing off the bench, he is done. Are you adding Vujicic? No, you're not, but Aflalo's done. Vujicic is not really a target here either for our DFS lineups. Brandon Rush, Yeah, Brandon Rush has been getting some extra run, but I don't think we're going to be looking too heavily at him. Small forwards, Harry Barnes. Knock yourself out. I won't be. 4,200 for him, and he's doing nothing, really. Mallow is at 9,000. I feel that Mallow is a 40-plus guy pretty much every night with the way that they're playing him, so I reckon he's a relatively safe guy to use at small forward. Power forwards.
Percentages.
6,000 for Chris Stapps. He is playing after that stomach issue kept him out. He played 31 minutes in the last game. Do I believe he's going back to 30 minutes? No, I don't, because he's a rookie. He doesn't know how to play in this league. He needs to learn. Come on, man, you're a rookie. Nope, won't be using him at 6,000. Maurice Spates at 4,000. What do we do with him? He's averaging 23 points across his last three, 21 across his last five, and that is very useful. The Knicks somehow are good at reducing power forward output, though, so I would throw Spates into a tournament, but I wouldn't put my hopes very high. Draymond at 8,300. Steph and Clay, the same sort of situation. Tournaments, yes. Cash games, no. And if Kristaps plays, which he is doing, Derek Williams' value, even at 3,900, is eliminated. Despite his pretty good form at 3,900, he's going to go back to maybe 16, 17 minutes, and it's not going to be worth our while. At center, Rob Lopez. He is at 6,000. You feel that 30 points for him is right on the money, so I think he is a really nice cash game option. Andy Bogut at 48. I would much rather him at 42, so I don't think I'm going to be looking there. And Kylo Quinn and Andy Varejao, not a lot to love. Let's look at the DFS picks of the day. Point guards, Jose Calderon, 4,200. Darren Collison, 53. And Drew Holiday, 78. I love John Wall as well, by the way. Shooting guards, Tone Allen, 4,500. Lance Stevenson, 56, if he plays. And I don't like any of these high-priced shooting guards, which is really just Jim Butler and Jim Harden, the two Jims. Not sure I love either of them. Small forwards, Otto Porter, 45. Nick Mirotic, 51. And LeBron James, 98. Power forwards, Willie Cauley-Stein, 37, Jared Sullinger, 66, and Tone Davis, 10,100, and the centers, Steve Adams, 43, Enes Kanter, 52, and DeMarcus Cousins, 11,100. We are done today, guys. Make sure you are going on to SeatGeek, downloading that app, and using that promo code REDROCK to help show your support for the podcast and save yourself money when buying tickets. Subscribe on YouTube or iTunes to this show and leave a review. Follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at the relevant addresses, which you all should know by now. And of course, check out basketballmonster.com. You know all the great stuff that's over there. Forums, comments, tools, projections, daily, seasonal, all that sort of stuff. It's awesome. Follow us on Twitter at BaskMonster as well. Also, we are done for today's podcast, guys. I hope you enjoyed it. Congratulations to Tyler Durden for getting the 111 question correct. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.